Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Omar Khan. With me, I have my colleague, Kirill. And today, we'll be talking with you about how to use mobile services to build mobile applications for employees. Before we begin the demos, it makes sense to talk a little bit about why mobile apps matter in the enterprise. And there's a transformation going on right now within enterprises around adopting mobile. And there's a few things driving that. First is mobile apps really allow you to deliver apps that were never possible before. If you think of apps in organizations or in business where traditionally the apps have been desktop or web-based apps with a forms-based interface, you use keyboard and mouse as the primary input mechanism. What you can do is somewhat limited relative to what you can do on a mobile form factor. With mobile apps, you get a much richer interaction experience, and you can build apps for employees that take advantage of a lot of the capabilities that form factor provides, such as input from voice, from touch, input from the sensors like video, as well as being able to take advantage of the context that the device is providing to the application, so knowing where the user of the application is, as well as enabling greater interactivity and engagement by things like push notifications. So if you think of an app where it's important to notify the user to engage with the app, a traditional web or desktop app doesn't make that very easy because you're not always in front of your desktop looking at the screen. Whereas with a mobile app, that level of interactivity and engagement goes up dramatically. So that's one thing that's really fueling enterprises to look at this new medium and build apps for employees that are based basically mobile apps. The second thing that's fueling the transformation is increasingly the workforce is now made up of a generation that grew up with mobile as their medium, preferred medium of working. And so, you know, if you grow up with apps all around you and mobile devices all around you, when you come to the workforce, you basically expect the same productivity that you get in your consumer life, but at work. And so consumers expect to be able to work anywhere, at any time, with any device. They expect to be able to get the rich experiences that they see in consumer apps at work. A good example of that is Uber. So if you're familiar with Uber, it's a really nice integrated experience for being able to get a ride from one place to another. So if I'm at a large organization that has a big campus, why can't my organization give me the same app for taking a shuttle from one building to another building? So you're starting to now see employees actually demanding that those experiences that they see in the real world are the experiences that they get with their work productivity. And then finally, businesses are recognizing the first 2 points. They're recognizing that mobile is unlocking a lot of new capability that wasn't possible before, and they're recognizing that their employees are wanting to work in different ways. And so increasingly, you see businesses now adopting mobile first as a mantra. Recently, if you follow Salesforce at all, there was a conference, Salesforce One conference, a Dreamforce conference, and the Salesforce CEO, Mark Benioff, basically made a pretty thought-provoking statement. He basically said he runs his entire business from his phone. And he said that is his vision of how businesses of the future will operate. So it's certainly an interesting time to be building mobile apps, especially within the enterprise. So today we'll talk a little bit about how mobile services in Azure enables you to do that. So although a lot of what's fueling mobile apps in the enterprise is the consumer space, there are some unique challenges when it comes to building mobile apps for employees or for members of organizations. Here I just call out a few of the distinct requirements that mobile apps within the enterprise drive towards the platform. So for instance, the experience is something I talked about where although users are demanding really nice experiences that they see in the consumer space, organizations and enterprises typically not only think about experience, but they also think about cost of ownership and cost of management. So in the consumer space, typically you'll see native first and native only as the predominant pattern for building mobile app experiences. In the enterprise, not only will you see native apps, but you will also see a trend towards building apps that are cross-platform using a tool like Xamarin or PhoneGap so that the app can be delivered to all the devices without having to build 3 or 4 different versions of it. You also authenticate differently when it comes to using applications within an organization. You know, typically, if you're looking at the identity of the user in your application, in a consumer space, it's usually a social identity. So you log in using your Facebook or your Twitter or your Google or Microsoft account. For corporate apps where data is much more sensitive, you want to make sure that the right people within the organization have access to your application. So it's very important to be able to log in using your corporate credentials. And it's very important to be able to have access control to resources with things like groups. So you can basically, in your corporate identity system like Azure Active Directory, define different groups within the organization so that if an employee leaves the organization, you can simply remove them from the directory and all your apps remain secure. So that's a very, very important consideration. I mentioned data being sensitive. In consumer apps, you're really dealing with personal data. So there's a different set of concerns there around privacy and data belonging to individuals. In enterprise and employee apps, the data that you're dealing with is corporate-owned data. And so there's different considerations that come into play when you're having corporate data come down to the device. Who has access to that data? What is the data doing when it's at rest on the device itself? That brings up my last point. Although we see data at rest on the device in the consumer space, there's some tools that work well offline and some apps. Predominantly, though, in the consumer space, most of the apps are connected and they require connectivity. In employee scenarios, it's a very different landscape, and being able to be productive while there is no network is an important consideration when you're building apps for employees. If the app is the primary way that the employee gets their job done, you don't want them to stop working because the network went down. This actually conference is a really good example of that. I just saw the slide at the beginning of the beginning of the session, which relays that point exactly. It said that the ratings app was offline. Well, that app should never be offline. I should be able to rate any session. We know that Wi-Fi at conferences sucks, so we shouldn't have an app that depends on the network connectivity of the conference for the conference itself. So it would be great if that app was using mobile services and using our offline capability. So to highlight kind of these characteristics or what an app like this looks like, I'm actually going to bring up a field engineer example. Actually, I don't have it. I realize I don't have it up here. That's fine. I won't bring it up. So I think the point really is that the apps are different. I was going to show an example of an app that does that, but we'll be demoing that app, and we'll actually be building that app throughout the session, so you'll get an idea of what the application does. To describe the application, it's basically an application for a field engineer. So a field engineer is typically someone who's an employee that's going on-site to the customer or to a job, and is then basically performing that job using a tablet or a phone. And so what considerations, all these considerations come into play in that field engineer app. You want to see the work orders that you have, and here's the example of the app that's loading up here pretty quickly. You want to see all the work orders for yourself. You want to be logged in using corporate credentials. So I'm not sure if this one's connected. Yeah, that's fine. We'll be building this app, so you'll see it in a sec. And then you want, because you're a field engineer and you're working on site, you want to be able to get through your job and mark all the status updates for your job and have all the details about the job in terms of all the data you need on site to be available if you're remote and you don't have network connectivity at the location that you're at. So that's a very good example of a type of employee app where the considerations for what you need when you're building that app are very, very different, and the platform really has to be able to provide those capabilities. And so as we think about those requirements, that's one of the things that we've spent a lot of time in mobile services thinking about. Not only do we make it easy in mobile services to build great consumer apps, we've spent a lot of time thinking about all the capabilities that are necessary in the platform to build these interesting apps for employees. So we provide you a turnkey backend that not only allows you to build native applications, but you can also build cross-platform applications with frameworks like Xamarin or PhoneGap or even just HTML and JavaScript using our backend. We make it very, very easy to do corporate sign-on. So for these apps, you really want to log in using corporate credentials. So we've integrated well with Azure Active Directory to be able to allow your app to be secure and authenticated with the credentials of the user or the employee. We integrate not only with other cloud providers. The Azure Active Directory enables single sign-on for things like Office 365. So if you want to store data in the cloud and use SaaS like Office 365, mobile services enables that really, really easily. But we also allow you to connect to any legacy data system. So we have a very powerful way of mapping any data model into your mobile front end and then down to your client. And we'll be demonstrating how that works. Finally, you know, a lot of the data in these corporate systems, I talked about a field engineer app where the app is about doing work orders. Those work orders aren't going to be in the cloud. They're going to be in some customer database somewhere in some legacy system that was implemented 10 years ago. And you need to get that data out to the employee available offline. So being able to connect on premises is a key requirement, and mobile services enables that as well. And then finally, we talked a little bit about being able to have that data offline. So we have a really good sync API and a sync model that allows you to make your data available on any platform, including cross-platform things like Xamarin. And when we think about building these types of apps, one of the other things we've been doing in mobile services is really thinking about who is the developer building these apps. It's the corporate developer, the person who's basically building apps for employees. And so we wanted to make sure that the capabilities we have leverage all the existing skill sets that people have around .NET. And so we make all the power of .NET available within mobile services to do these scenarios, and you'll see that in a bit. So with that, I'm actually going to hand it over to Kirill. And Kirill's going to really quickly start building out that field engineer app, and he's going to use Xamarin and a new technology called Xamarin Forms. To basically build an app that works on iOS and on Android and also uses mobile services. So,
excellent. So we'll start with a simple app. Here I have a simple version of the field engineers that Amar talked about. It just lists jobs for me and what jobs I need to I'm already performing on site right now at this moment, what jobs I haven't started yet and what jobs were completed. This field engineer app is built using Xamarin. It's cross-platform. You can run it on Android or iOS. Right now it's running an iOS simulator here. It uses Xamarin Forms. Let me quickly walk you through what Xamarin's forms are if you haven't seen them yet. So if you're familiar with Xamarin, in the past, Xamarin is a great way of building cross-platform apps using C#. The only issue is that typically with Xamarin, the UI, you have to build and using native, and typically you have to have native UI skills for each platform. Recently, Xamarin introduced Xamarin Forms, which allows you to build UI in a cross-platform fashion as well. Here I have a few views for my app, including the job list page. And as you can see, the Xamarin Forms work very similarly to other UI frameworks. You declare your controls. You initialize them in a declarative fashion. You bind them to your data. You can easily stack them together using stack layout. You can configure navigation and push. Our app is master details, so I can go and look at the details of my job. So you can implement this navigation by pushing the detail page on the stack. So all of the standards operations. And this works cross-platform. So you write it once, and it runs on iOS, and it runs on Android.
And the data you're showing in the app right now, is that real data? Is that mock data?
Good point. So no, this is app right now is client only. This is just the UI. So the first step we're going to do in our quest is to connect it to the cloud so that it gets live data. And we're going to use mobile services to do so. Let's create mobile service first. How many of you are familiar with mobile services? All right, so some in the audience. Great, so it's fairly straightforward to create a mobile service. You navigate to Azure Management Portal and go to Compute, Mobile Service, Create. You give your mobile service a name so that it has a unique URL in the cloud. You point it to a database. By default, mobile services store data in SQL databases. However, that's not the only data store available. You tell it where to run in the world. And tell which language you prefer to extend it with, should you need so. And off you go. I already created a mobile service, so I'm going to use the one that I created, tech at 10:30. Right from the get-go, when you create a mobile service, you are greeted with a quick start that allows you to consume it and connect any app on any platform, whether it's Windows, iOS, Android, or cross-platform frameworks like Xamarin or PhoneGap. In this case, we're using Xamarin, so I can easily connect it by following this simple tutorial and connect my app by just pasting a little bit of code to the app. In addition to Quick Start, mobile services gives you out of the gate a number of capabilities. Right? You can configure your mobile service to do cross-platform push notifications to any of the platforms that are interesting to you. You can configure it to authenticate users using either social identity providers or Active Directory, which we will use in this talk later on. You can by default, mobile services are available for free perpetually, but if you need to use them for production and expect a large number of requests, you can easily scale it to however many instances you need so that it supports larger traffic. This mobile service, while we can configure it to do push and auth, needs extra logic to be useful. And we're going to add this extra logic using .NET and using Visual Studio. Visual Studio provides a number of tools to work with mobile services. For example, you can create a project for mobile services using mobile services template. Just navigate to Project Create, Cloud, and here is the Azure Mobile Services template for you. I already have a mobile service project created. This project is an ASP.NET Web API project with few extensions. That's all it is. Right out of the gate, you'll get some sample controllers and sample data models. What I'm going to do is I'm going to add a job data model because we are building an app that lists jobs that employee needs to go do. And to start with, our jobs data model will be fairly straightforward. Wrong folder. So it will have a couple fields, job title, status. And this is the EF entity, so we're going to use EF code first to start with, and it's going to create tables based on this schema. Next, I'm going to add a controller. I want to add custom API that exposes my job data to my client app. And again, this is just a web API. But we do offer you helpful scaffolds, like mobile services table controller.
Can you tell a little bit about what's a table controller and why we would add that versus just a kind of some other controller that we have in ASP.NET Web API?
Definitely, yeah. So mobile services table controller offers you CRUD API with a number of helpful facilities in it. So it allows you to expose data. It already has built-in implementation of a data query, pagination. It also has implementation of offline sync capability. And it is ready to be consumed by mobile services client SDK. And we have client SDK for every platform, iOS, Android, Windows, native, or cross-platform frameworks like Xamarin and PhoneGap. So by just adding this class, I'm exposing my jobs data to any platform in a native fashion, in an easy-to-use SDK. Let me create it quickly. I'm going to use my existing context that points to local SQL Express, and I'm going to add my job controller. Mobile services offers you local debugging experience, just like any ASP.NET Web API project, as you would expect. We have a helpful and a simple help page that allows you to poke your mobile service, see what it expose. So, for example, we can see if we have any data in our jobs table from our prior demo dry runs. So you can not only just browse the methods that you get as APIs that mobile services exposes, but also poke it with a simple test client.
Right, so here you're actually getting the data. There's a really handy test client to get the data and see what the API does, but you're also running the backend locally, and you're able to debug and test it locally before you push it up to
Precisely.
The cloud.
Yes. So it's a very simple but nice to use developer experience for local debugging development. So I do have a little bit of data there. Now our mobile service is ready to go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to publish it to the mobile service that we created in Azure Management Portal. Publishing experiences again. Very familiar to you. We are just using ASP.NET Web Publish.
So here you're basically building the client in your development IDE, and then you're populating that custom code up into the mobile services that we created earlier. Kirill, you're using Visual Studio Publishing UI here. What if you wanted to set up like a continuous integration or some other kind of flow to actually have changes go to the server more frequently?
Mobile services share with Azure websites code publishing infrastructure, right? So you have web deploy and Git enabled, and so you can integrate with either TFS or GitHub and set up continuous integration deployment jobs, so you don't have to use Visual Studio and do it manually. We also offer you CLI, kind of command line tooling to work with mobile services. And the experience is similar to what you may know from working with websites, with Azure websites as well. So my mobile service is now in the cloud, ready to go. So what I'm going to do is go to our Xamarin project and connect our app to the mobile service. All the interactions with the service are going to be encapsulated in this job service class. And first, we need to connect to our mobile service, initialize mobile services client SDK. Thankfully, Xamarin provides us nice snippet experience. I'm using Xamarin Studio here. I don't, just for the demo simplicity, you can use Visual Studio as well. Xamarin has integration with Visual Studio, and you can connect it to a Mac instance to run, to deploy and run the app in the emulator. So I have a mobile service connected to the mobile service that we just created. Next, I'm going to remove the dummy data and actually initialize the proxy to our job controller table.
So this is why we were talking about the table controller. What it does is it gives you these really nice SDKs on the client. And so this is a Xamarin app, but imagine it was an iOS app or an Android app. If you expose your web API using the mobile services table controller interface, then you get a lot of rich capability in native SDKs in the environment that you're working in.
A few other methods. We need to read jobs, of course. And again, mobile services SDK provides a nice link experience. And these link expressions will be translated to all data query expressions on the wire. And finally, the update is equally simple. And voila, in three lines of code, we have, or a few more, we have our app connected to the mobile service. We can run it and get live data from our mobile service in a few minutes. Now, the interesting part here is the there you go. The interesting part here is that this data now coming live through the cloud from a SQL Azure database in the cloud. Now, of course, this data doesn't look very real to us, right? So the question is, Amar, how do we connect it to an existing database that likely field engineer uses?
Yeah, that's a good point. So what we saw here was first, you know, you might be using a framework like Xamarin and building apps using Xamarin Studio or something and building a client experience. One of the things mobile services makes really, really easy is having an SDK to store that data using a backend. Here what we saw basically was storing that data to basically a new data store. You know, you defined a model for jobs, and then we use Entity Framework Code first, and it's just writing that data into whatever backend store that you define. While that's okay for some apps, where you're basically creating net new data and you want to store that data somewhere, for employee apps, more typically, there's a different set of scenarios that you deal with when you're working with data in applications. So what you can see with employee apps is that there's a variety of use cases. The greenfield scenario is the one we just saw, which is I define a data model in my backend, and I let the backend handle storing that data model to any data store of my choice. But also, what is more common, and especially in this scenario where I'm dealing with work orders, is that that work order data is stored in some system, probably a SQL or an Oracle database somewhere, or something like SAP, and it's basically available on-premises. So we provide a capability in mobile services as well to connect to that type of data, but still map it through the same nice SDK that we just showed in terms of having that client experience that you expect. And then finally, increasingly what we're seeing for data is not only stored in on-premises legacy systems, but more and more businesses now are consuming software services off the shelf, so they basically buy SaaS, and all your data actually lives within a SaaS, which may be in the cloud more than likely. And so loading that data from a SaaS into your mobile services is another key scenario that we enable. And so for the greenfield scenario, if we look at what mobile services does, basically we have a very straightforward model here. We have that table controller that I talked about. And then that table controller effectively gives you a very nice API set on the client, SDKs for every platform out there, and rich capabilities like offline. And then we have some built-in domain managers, which basically map our table controller to a variety of stores. So things like SQL, both in the cloud and on-premises. Table storage or structured storage like MongoDB. So you kind of have a choice of how you want to store your data in that greenfield model and then expose it out to the client using our table controller interface. For existing data, basically we have the same model, but we leverage a great technology in .NET called AutoMapper. So if you're familiar with AutoMapper, it's basically a mapping technology that lets you take existing data and map it to your own data model. And so basically with AutoMapper, what we enable is not only can you store data with our default kind of domain manager to a store, but you can take data that may already exist in a system and then map it into your mobile service so that it then is available using that table controller interface. And we'll dive into exactly how that works. And then finally, when you are connecting to existing data, more than often that data is not going to be in the cloud. That data is going to be living behind a firewall, somewhere on a server in the enterprise, and there's a challenge on how I connect to that data. And you can do several techniques. One is you can set up a virtual private network between your mobile service in the cloud and the data on premise. If you've ever tried to do that, that typically involves somebody in IT creating a VPN for you, and it requires a network configuration to do that. We also have a really cool technology in Azure Mobile Services called Hybrid Connections, which allows you to create a point-to-point connection between your on-premises server and your cloud backend. And basically, Hybrid Connections then allows you to have that link to your on-premises data without requiring any network topology changes. So you can basically install an agent on the server, have a secure connection between your cloud backend, so that if there is data that you don't want to store in the cloud, you can still have your data on-premises, but then connect it up through the mobile services for capabilities like sync, which we'll be showing in a bit here. So to kind of highlight connecting to existing data, we'll switch back to Kirill. And Kirill's now going to take that simple app that we built where the data is coming off the cloud and we're storing the jobs in a new store. We're going to actually move it to reading the jobs from a database that already exists with a very complex schema, and then exposing it out to the same Xamarin client. So I'll hand it over to Kirill.
Excellent. So what we have here is SQL Management Studio, and you see the database that we're going to be using. Slightly more complex schemas that we've used in the previous demo. So you have jobs have customers and equipment that the employee needs to bring with them to the appointment. And you have quite a bit of data in it. So you have relationships data. This data, as is, may not be as easy to consume from the client app, especially if you have to build a cross-platform client app. So what we're going to use, and we're going to use mobile services to massage this data and present it to our client in a more in a simpler way, and then show you how to and build on top of it to build the field engineer application. I have here mobile service, very similar to what we just showed in the demo, in the first demo, except I already added the entity frameworks entities for my database. So I have my jobs, and
so that's just standard stuff. EF and models.
Yeah, and it has standard set of properties. It has customer point, relationships with customers and equipment, etc. What I'm going to do is, just like before, I'm going to add a controller.
So here all you're doing is basically just taking the tables in the database and creating EF models for each one of those, and then just basically having a controller that that loads the data into the model.
Yep, yeah, that will map the data. I'm going to use the DB context that points to our existing database. We'll still call it job controller. Now, this controller works directly with the model, right? So the data that it will project on the wire will be still jobs and customers and employees, and it will expose all these foreign key relationships in a way that for our client app will be slightly harder to...
So can you run it and actually show what it's exposing?
Yeah, not a bad idea. So let's see here.
So again, this is running locally, so if you're building your mobile service, you don't have to... You can run and debug the thing locally, and then we have that nice UI, which we're going to look at real quickly here, which allows us to actually see what data is coming back from the database that that we just showed.
Yeah, so a simple GET request, and we'll see that the data that our mobile service has the foreign keys, it has IDs for to our customers. It's this would require the client to go and reconstruct the relationships, which is not something we want.
So if you looked at the UI in the app we were building, it really doesn't need to present all this information down to the client. You really don't want to project such a complex data model down to a simple client where all you're looking at is just a simple list of work orders.
What we're going to do is we're going to use AutoMapper. And first, we're going to add our data objects that are slightly simpler than the model objects that we had. So here's our DTO objects. And as you can see, the job DTO has customers and equipment that we need to show in the app, but they're already nested, they're already included. And we're going to set up AutoMapper to map our models to our DTO objects. This is fairly standard technique, so it's not necessarily part of mobile services. It's available to any web API project. But it especially works nicely with mobile services table controllers. I'm going to add the map definition that I prepared earlier. It's a simple map. It's going to massage the relationships with equipments. It's going to add ability to ignore customer and equipments on the requests that are coming from our client to mobile service, because the only request that we're going to be seeing is update, and it just updates the main entity, the job. It doesn't update customers or equipments. And it also maps the and simplifies the customer and equipment objects.
So you've done a few things there. You've basically mapped fields so that you can have a simpler schema for each model that you're exposing down to the client. And then you've actually done some nice stuff here where you're actually nesting objects so you get a nice nested structure. You basically are still passing just a jobs table down, and then that jobs object has the nice nesting available to it. And then on the way back, we're basically telling it to ignore any updates to customers or orders, customers or the other table, because all we're really updating is jobs. So we're projecting a very, very simple API down to the client, and that's what you want. And then we're using the power of AutoMapper to really do all the smarts in terms of how that backend then talks to the existing legacy data that exists.
Our next steps here will be to initialize our mobile service with the maps that we created, to initialize the AutoMapper. And we are doing it inside the web API config. With mobile services, all the configuration, all the initialization goes into this web API config. It's a standard web API practice. We're just using the, instead of inventing something new. I think we are quite ready. The last thing we want to do is we want to change our job controller so that it uses DTO objects instead of our model entities. And to spare you watching me type, I'm just going to paste it here. So it's it uses job DTO. I did a few other things. I am using domain manager, default mapped entity domain manager. And Omar showed you that the role of domain managers is to connect the table controllers to a variety of data sources, right? So in our case, it's SQL. You can use domain manager to connect it to Mongo database, to table storage, and make your mobile service expose data from a variety of data sources. We have folks built domain manager for SharePoint, built domain manager for Salesforce, a variety of data sources, whether those are traditional databases or SaaS APIs. And this particular domain manager is integrated with AutoMapper, so it invokes AutoMapper to map between models and DTOs. I also did a few other modifications, so I'm making the GETs query to include GET for the jobs to include customers and equipments in the response and use the mapper. Same for the lookup for individual jobs. And the update, I override the updates not only to update the job entity, but also update the related entity job history to add that this particular job was updated at this particular time. All fairly straightforward. So now we have our job controller. We can run our mobile service locally, and we'll see that the data is much simpler to use. In fact, I think I'm just gonna.
Yeah, why don't we just switch to the app and see it exactly. It running?
Let's publish it to the mobile service.
So while that's publishing, basically what we're doing is we're taking that simple job app that we saw before, and now we've connected it to. An example of an existing data store that has a bunch of data in it, a very complex schema. We added AutoMapper code into our .NET implementation to basically then expose that schema in a very friendly way. And now we're going to see how that is consumed on the client pretty much the same way it was consumed before. So from a client perspective, you're getting that simplicity in the client programming model that we provide.
Excellent. So our app didn't change. It's still the same client app, but now we're getting a lot more data. The data is more real, has more information. So our UI will show more data. Let's run the app and see what are we getting. All right.
Are you sure oh, there it is.
Yep, it goes. Yep, so now we have real data, and if we drill into any particular job, we see both customer information and equipment information present. And this resembles the end app that we actually want to build now.
So the interesting thing is we're just passing back a jobs table, but we're nesting the customer information and the order information underneath each job. By using that auto mapper to map that as a nested object underneath the jobs table. And then from the client, it's basically just a jobs table because that's all the client really needs to see.
Great. Now, we still used the data that sits in the cloud, right? We just configured, we create our mobile service, we configure to connect to existing database. But that database, if you see in our SQL Management Studio, is located in the SQL Azure. The real field engineer, the real cable company, would likely, since it's customer data, will likely prefer not to host their data in the cloud, but rather keep it on premises. And, you know, who can judge them? So what we're going to do is we're going to connect our mobile service to an on-premise database using a technology called hybrid connections that Omar showed on the previous slide.
Great. So are you going to configure the hybrid connection now?
Yes. Okay. Let me quickly switch to the portal. Let me introduce you guys to hybrid connections. So hybrid connections is a technology that's available for both mobile services and Azure websites. It's a technology that allows you to relay TCP traffic from the cloud to on-premise services. And one particular use case that we use quite often, and our customers use quite often, is relaying traffic to the SQL database on-premises. Here I have our mobile service portal. And hybrid connections, I already have configured hybrid connection. It's right here. And it points to Mr. Yavor's machine that is right here next to me, sitting next to me on the desk. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to configure, I already have hybrid connection configured. I'm going to change, I also have configured a connection string that is different from my default connection string. On-premises databases, and if you show what it is, and it's right here, on-premise database, and it points to our hybrid connection to Yavor's laptop.
So if you scroll back up, I saw port 1433, I think. So do you, on the machine where the database is, like the server, do I have to open an endpoint for 1433?
No, absolutely not. The only thing you need to do is you need to create the hybrid connection using BizTalk. BizTalk portal extension, and we have it right here, and we have our hybrid connections configured, and once you create a hybrid connection, which just takes less than a minute, then you need to install, follow this on-premises setup simple wizard to install and configure an agent on the laptop. So on Yavor's laptop, we have a hybrid connections agent running, and it relays the traffic between SQL Server listening on port 1433 and our Azure mobile service.
So what it's doing is it's actually using HTTP to tunnel TCP traffic across the wire. So you don't have to configure any firewall or open up any ports. You can actually have a TCP connection directly back to your on-premises without having to update any network configuration.
Great. So what am I going to do?
So while you're doing, are you going to change that here? Should I show the data on your
machine?
Yeah,
so I need to do one thing, which is I need to update my mobile service to use the connection string that we just configured, pointing to Yavor's laptop.
Okay, so let's do one thing here while Kirill's doing that. Let's actually switch over to Yavor's laptop, who's sitting in the crowd there. So basically, I've kept it very simple. Like here you can see that this is a local SQL server. It's not in the cloud. It's actually sitting on this box here. This box doesn't have any direct connectivity to Azure Mobile Services in terms of TCP connection. It's basically just something that is connected on the network. And basically here I'm just running a simple query where we're looking at job number 63. And we're going to just keep an eye on the status here. So basically it says on site. So now Kirill's going to show, he's updated the connection string. He's going to show that app running. And it's going to pull data from this database now, not the database in the cloud. And then we'll see what the state of the job 63 is. And then we'll update the state and then come back here to see was the database on this machine updated based on the app that's actually running in the cloud and on the client's phone.
So I'm just publishing my updated mobile service with a new connection string that I changed in the DP context. And once the publish succeeds, which happens any second now, excellent. Now I'm going to go back to my app, and we'll run it.
So we really didn't change anything in the client. All we did is we just changed the mobile service to use a different connection string, and that's it. And basically that connection string now is pointing to a hybrid connection that basically is the same database but on-premises.
And if the demo goes with us, the connection to Yavor's laptop.
Yeah. And his laptop's on Wi-Fi using the the Wi-Fi of the conference. So hopefully it is able to relay back data to the data to
all
the client
right.
here. So
all
there
right.
we go.
Yes. Yeah. Great.
So that's actually going from this laptop over the Wi-Fi to the mobile service down to the client. It's a secure connection. It doesn't require any firewall port openings to do. It just runs over standard HTTP. But we're actually using a TCP port 1433 connection to the SQL, so all the SQL libraries continue to work in your .NET code. And we can see here that the job number 63 is on site. So why don't you go ahead and complete that job, and we'll flip back to the laptop to see what happens.
All right.
And that, again, is going over the wire back down to this laptop.
Yep.
Okay, so we've completed that job. Let's switch back to the laptop. And so we're going to the local database on this laptop. I'll just go ahead and execute this query again.
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, please switch to the right database, not here, master.
Sorry?
Instead of master.
Why don't you do it? I clicked on something that switched me off to another database. Oh, okay,
just,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Oh, okay, there. I was looking at the wrong database, sorry. There we go. So now we can see that if you look at the status of the job, it's completed. So we basically now not only connected to that existing schema that was in that database, but we've actually connected it to a database that's on my laptop without any network configuration on this laptop, and be able to actually access that data from my .NET code in the cloud.
And no changes to the code were needed, other than just using a different connection string. Right? You don't need to do anything. You just use the same code that you're used to, same SQL library, same ADO.NET, and it works seamlessly with the data source that lives on premises.
There's a question here.
I understand, right, it's not mirroring, it's
relaying.
It's relaying.
It's relaying.
Yeah,
it's a relay, yes. Yeah. It's a relay over the cloud, yeah.
Is that tunnel open all the time?
Yes, it is.
Is it being initiated from the cloud to the
cloud? No, it's open all the time. It's a network connection. Yes, that's a great question. So the question is there a connection open all the time to on-premises, and is there a risk of the connection breaking? So it's a great question. Yes, the connection is open all of the time, but you can configure multiple agents on the client and actually have redundant connections to one endpoint that will then get load balanced across all your client endpoints. So if one connection breaks, you can continue to have connection to other endpoints. So you can set up kind of a load balanced connection across several endpoints that then talk to the same database on the back end. And you can also have a clustered database on the back end as well to get more redundancy. So switching back to the slides, I think the next thing we're going to talk about, I'm going to switch the slides here. So what we've done now is we've actually taken that very simple example of a field engineer, and we were first storing jobs data in a table. Then we said, well, that's a new table. That's typically not how we do it. So we were then taking jobs data from an existing database. We put that database on premises where it typically is, and then we map that data using AutoMapper to the nice API that we provide in mobile services. And so now we have real corporate data coming into our app from an on-premises system, which is kind of the scenario that we've been talking about. But now that we have this data that you don't want to put in the cloud because it's so sensitive coming to your application, we want to be sure that that data isn't accessible by any user of any app. And so we want to secure access to that data by making sure that we require login using your corporate identity. And we use that corporate identity to basically present the data that's only available to you. So one user may not get the same data that another user may get. So to do that, basically we integrate with Azure Active Directory, which is a pretty common directory system used in many organizations. And Azure Active Directory lets you sync your on-premises directory with the cloud directory in Azure. So basically, you have a replicated directory available to mobile services. Another thing that Azure Active Directory allows is it allows you to create roles and groups. So in this particular case, it's a field engineer. We may have a role within our directory system for field engineers or a group, and have membership within that group for all the field engineers in the organization. So that gives me a really nice mechanism for controlling access to resources based on groups and roles and not just on individual access. And so that's another benefit of integrating with Azure Active Directory is you can take advantage of that whole role-based access model that Azure Active Directory provides. So how does that work? Basically, Azure Active Directory provides some great libraries on all the platforms we've been talking about. So iOS, on Android, on Windows, as well on Xamarin. Today they announced support for SDKs that work with Xamarin. And so you use the Azure Active Directory APIs to basically log your user in on the client. And then you get that token back from Azure Active Directory, and then you pass it up to the mobile service, which then uses that token to access resources based on the credential of the user. So not only can you access resources based on the user identity, you can also then use Azure Active Directory for single sign-on scenarios. So in this particular case, if you have something like Office 365, which also uses Azure Active Directory, and you want to store other data in the cloud, like maybe let's say when the job is completed, I want to store an image of the completed job in a SharePoint list or in a SharePoint environment, I can basically use the same credentials that were logged into Azure to then use APIs from other SaaS like SharePoint without having to require the user to log in again. Basically, that single sign-on works across every service that works with Azure Active Directory. So you can not only do it from the client, but even from mobile services, you can basically pass that context on behalf of the user so that when the backend is then taking that photograph of the completed job and putting it in SharePoint, SharePoint knows that it's the user that was using the app that stored that photograph, and that's what you see in SharePoint. You don't see, you know, mobile TechEd 1030 uploaded this photo. You see user A that was using TechEd 1030 uploaded this photo. So that context flows all the way back into services like Office and Office 365. We'll see how easy that is. Mobile services makes it very, very easy to integrate corporate sign-on. And so Kirill will demonstrate that here real quickly.
All right. As I mentioned earlier, you can configure your mobile service to authenticate users using Active Directory. And the way to do that is in two steps. Step first is on Identity tab of mobile services. You have Azure Active Directory section. You need to take this app URL, which is the identify URL of your our mobile service, and you need to go to Active Directory part of the Azure Management Portal. Here you have a number of applications that I already have registered, and one of them is our field engineer application. And on the configuration tab, we already have configured our mobile service. And the next step is to take the client ID.
It's further up. Oh,
sorry. To take this client ID and copy it back to the mobile service.
So for those of you that have used mobile services before, this is very similar to how you do any kind of identity with social login. You go to Facebook, you register your app. Facebook gives you a client secret. You take that client secret, you put it back inside of your mobile service so that then enables your mobile service to use Facebook to log in. And so we're basically doing that same kind of OAuth configuration that Azure Active Directory supports with the mobile service here.
One good part about Active Directory that is not present in other identity providers is the support for multi-tenancy. Right? And so here I'm configured not only to authenticate using that particular directory tenant, but also only accept users from a particular tenant within my Active Directory, which in this case is my tenant, Kirill G. And so only users in my tenant can access our mobile service now. So that's the first part, is configuring in the portal, configuring our mobile service to use Active Directory. Next step is to authorization, is to change. So our mobile service now will authenticate users using Active Directory. Next step is to assert that we will only accept authenticated users to our mobile service. That's used that user's authorization level attribute on our job controller.
So the first thing you did was basically enable Active Directory, and we're going to have UI that's going to require the user to log in. But here, actually, you're securing the API as well.
Yes.
So that the API can't be callable from anywhere else without the user token.
Yeah, precisely. Mobile services offer you a set of simple authorization attributes and with different levels of access. And the next step I'm going to do is I'm going to use the information, the claims that are passed with the Active Directory token, specifically user ID, to filter out and only return the jobs that belong to the employee that is being authenticated. So I'm going to do a very simple additional query clause that only takes the jobs whereas the agent ID matches the authenticated user. All right, removing a little bit of garbage here. But otherwise, our mobile service is ready to go. So we're going to build and publish.
So while that's publishing, basically, a few things going on. So we're setting up the mobile service to basically enable login using Azure Active Directory. We're basically then going to have the client require that the user log in. But then we're also securing our API with attributes to say anybody who's not has a login token can't actually call that API. So if for some reason somebody wants to try and access the data directly, they still need that authorization token. And then lastly, we're actually taking that identity and we're filtering the data to be only the data that's relevant or available to that user. You may actually not want one engineer seeing data from another engineer for whatever reason. So you can actually filter the data based on identity as well.
Our final step is to use Mobile Services Client SDK to authenticate users using Active Directory.
So we're just adding a little bit of code here that basically requires that the app log in.
And it takes only one method, login async. So this is the standard auth flow, and it works, the same method works with any identity providers, whether it's Active Directory, whether it's Facebook, and it performs the auth handshake and passes the token to mobile service to authenticate. With that, we're going to run our little app. Later, while this app is running, later in the day, we have a Vittorio session. And Vittorio is going to talk about more advanced client libraries from Active Directory that allow you single sign-on and delegation scenarios that we are not using in this demo. But they also work with mobile services. So I need to authenticate using a user from my tenant that you saw previously.
So typically, this would be username at companyname.com and the password that you have at your work.
All right. And I'm going to sign in. And if I didn't do any typos, I should be able to see my data that is only intended to me.
Is it still coming over the
there
line?
You go. No, okay. Great. So now we have the data, and this is authenticated connection, and we get the results.
Fantastic. So yeah, so we've now seen quite a bit. We've actually, you know, talked about that field engineer in the beginning. It's a fairly challenging scenario when it comes to how you need to build it. And so we've seen that we've not only connected to data that is existing, we've connected to data that's on premises. We've basically integrated with Xamarin, so we get that nice cross-platform experience. So I only have to build the app once, and it can run on Android, iOS, Windows. And then we've also now secured the app so that only users from the company can access it, and only the data that's relevant or available to that user is brought down and displayed in the application. So we're basically now getting to a point where this is really starting to feel like an application for work and not an application that's a consumer app. The last thing we want to do is, because it's a field engineer and it's about doing work orders on site, we want to show how you can actually make that data available when the network is not there. So mobile services has a really nice capability to sync data offline and then basically work with that data while it's offline when you don't have network, and then be able to take those changes that you've made, sync them back to the store where the data is coming from, whether the store is on-premises or in the cloud. So here, the data is going to go all the way back to the on-premises database when the app comes back online. And then as those data changes happen, we also have the ability then to sync other devices to refresh that data when it goes back up to the cloud, which sometimes is very important, as we'll see here. So I'll switch back actually now and just explain that. So how does the sync work actually? So I mentioned earlier, like, you know, we're basically using AutoMapper and we're using .NET Web API to expose a simplified projection of the data down to the client. Well, if you're a .NET Web API developer, you can say, well, I do that all the time today. I can expose data through a REST API down to the client, no problem. The reason I think it's important to actually think about mobile services is our table controller has then the sync capability built in. So if you use the mobile services interface and expose your data through a table controller, then you actually get native APIs that allow you to work with data offline, sync that data. And that's really where the benefit of this model comes in. We're doing the mapping to a mobile services interface that then has offline and syncing capability built in. And then it's basically the exact same model. The only difference is now on the client, we have a local store that can cache that data. You can work with that data in the local store, and we have a mechanism to sync it back using again, that table controller interface that we provide. So now we'll switch back to Kirill's machine, and he'll actually show how we can take that data that we saw and make it available offline. And so while he's doing it here, he's actually bringing up two things. One is he's bringing up on the left-hand side an Android emulator. And on the right-hand side, he's basically bringing up the iOS app that we've been working with. And what you can see here is one change we've made to the application is we have an online and an offline mode, basically to simulate that the network is available or not. So the iOS app is offline. So the data is actually coming from SQLite on the local device. So all that data, when the network goes away, is still available. I can still drill into the jobs and see all my work orders. So as soon as I lose my connectivity, I don't lose everything that was I was working with. And then on the left-hand side, if the demo gods are with us, these Android emulators are a little finicky. We will have an emulator, an Android version of the app that will be online. And so that will be working with data directly. And so as we're making changes there, that data is just syncing back to the cloud through Android. And one other thing I want to highlight here is basically because we're using Xamarin Forms and Xamarin Studio, it goes back to that original point. You can build your app once, integrate Xamarin with mobile services like we've shown, and basically now you have an app without any code changes that's working both in iOS and in Android. And that's the power of Xamarin and Xamarin Forms. But mobile services integrates very, very nicely with the Xamarin framework and the Xamarin environment through the SDKs that we provide. So let's see if it works now. We'll see if the Android emulator actually boots up this time.
It looks like it's proceeding. If you've used Android emulators in your life before, you will sympathize with us a little. It does start once in the blue moon, but I think it will actually run. And if it doesn't, we'll just use the iOS emulator. Okay. So. Yep.
Oh, okay.
So here's our field engineer for running on Android. So now we use the same app, use the same code, and running field engineer on both. We're going to synchronize it with. So this is offline application. So I'm explicitly synchronizing. Let me walk you through the code here. The programming model for offline and mobile service is similar with the online scenario. So you have initialized mobile service just like we did before. We will initialize our mobile service client with the local cache for our data. Mobile services SDK uses SQLite, pretty popular local client-side database for offline scenarios. And we just initialize mobile services sync context, which is our client-side sync engine, with the SQLite database. The job table now is a sync instance of a sync table for mobile services, which points to a local table. It's a local table abstraction on top of SQLite. The API for job table for mobile services sync tables are very similar to the regular tables, meaning you can do the same link queries against it. You can do the same updates. However, once the connectivity is available, once we decide that it's time to sync, and it could be either your user explicit decision or you could build your app in a way where you hook these calls to a network change. To synchronize, mobile services offers you two methods, push async and pull async. Push async replaces all the changes that you may performed against a local cache, a local database, against mobile services table controller, guaranteeing the order, preserving the order, which is important because it allows you not only to correctly reapply all the local changes that haven't been synced yet, but also allow you to coordinate changes across multiple tables, potentially implement relational scenarios that have that involve relationships between tables, etc. And once you synchronize the client changes, you can pull, using pull async, pull the data from the mobile services table controller down to the client using pull async. And you can pass a query so you don't sync the world back to the client, so to populate the client database. You can pass a query, and it will do a smart incremental sync, so it will only bring the changes from the server that were recent, that are not yet that do not yet exist on the client.
So can you explain a little bit about the pushing before pulling? Is that an enforced pattern, or is that something that we make optional?
Yeah, well, definitely it is enforced. So you have to complete push async before you do pull async, and this is done to help you deal with conflicts. Push async has built-in conflict resolution. You either use our default one, or you customize it and handle conflicts yourself. You can handle conflicts either on the client or on the server. Most often, you won't be able to handle conflicts on the server, and so you return the error back to the client. And on the client, you'll get a callback, or in our case, catch the exception, and handle the conflicts either involving user's help or do it by yourself.
So what we're ensuring...
Once you resolve the conflicts on the client, you can, and the data is clean, then you can sync the additional changes from the server over using pull async. Yeah.
So what this pattern ensures is that anytime you're getting data from the server using the pull async method, there's no conflicts in the data. All your local changes have been submitted. All the conflicts have been resolved. So the data basically on the client is the same data on the server, and then you can do a pull async. So we've kept it like a fairly straightforward model. You have to push all your changes to the server. You have to resolve all the conflicts. And then you can pull the changes back down from the server, which are basically any updates that have happened. And so it's a very, very simple model and makes it really, really easy to take an existing app and basically add a few more methods to do this online-offline experience.
All right, so I'm really lucky. I have two emulators working now, and they have both run our app. So what I'm going to do now, I have in my app, I have this simulation of offline-online using this online button. So when it's online, this mobile service just you only work with data using online. In offline mode. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the iOS client in offline mode while moving the Android client to online mode and completing one of the jobs. So marking this job as complete. All right, so far so good. So now I have the job is complete and the information on the server is updated. Now I'm going to switch my iOS client to online mode, and I should receive the change down to the client.
So basically what you saw, one app was online. It synced the data right away. When the other app came online, it basically refreshed the data down to the client. That's actually kind of an interesting scenario for the field engineer, because you may come back to your van and have connectivity again, and somebody else might have completed a job assigned to you. You want to know that right away, so you want that information coming down to your client, because somebody else might have picked up one of your jobs, and you don't want to be working with offline data in that case. So really kind of powerful capability. And one thing I want to talk about there is this syncing data to all devices. So in this particular case, it is important when the data gets updated that the clients get that information as quickly as possible. Now, typically how you do that is you keep polling, right? Has anything changed on the server? Has anything changed on the server? But for a mobile application, if you've installed any bad mobile apps on your phone, anything that drains your battery, you're like, I'm not using this thing. I'm going to get rid of it. And polling on the server continuously is a great way to basically create an app that uses a lot of battery. So what you typically do instead is actually use push to sync. So the nice thing is that mobile services actually has push notifications built in. And so when data updates on the server and a job is completed, you can actually just send a push notification to every client. And then that client can actually go get that data. It wakes up. It can get a raw notification. It can load that data into the app. And so your app could be sleeping for an hour, but then get a notification from the server and then basically refresh the data using the push notification mechanism built into mobile services. So another kind of really nice thing that mobile services has that makes this whole offline and sync experience really, really clean. So kind of to sum it up and bring it all together, we spend a lot of time thinking about building a platform that not only is great for building fantastic apps for consumers, but we've really thought through what it takes to build a platform to build apps for organizations and employees of those organizations. So we've looked at supporting cross-platform frameworks, which are very important in this scenario. So we have SDKs and great integration with those technologies there. We've looked at basically connecting to data that already exists, whether that data is in the cloud or whether that data is on-premises. We've looked at some powerful mapping technology. We've looked at how mobile services integrates really, really well with Azure Active Directory to secure your app so that data is only available to those that have access to it. And then finally, what we saw now was basically the power of our offline sync capability and the push notifications built into Azure Mobile Services to allow your users to basically work with data while being offline, and then to be able to easily sync that data across all the apps. So with that, I think one other thing I want to mention is that we have this accelerator that we, the sample that we just built here in this talk, we have a fully functioning version of it available both for Windows and also for Xamarin. So all the code is there. You can actually go download that and basically use it as the basis for your next app. It has all the functionality that we just showed, and all the code is available at these links. And these slides will be available to you as well. And then we have about 5 minutes left, so thank you very much for attending. And if you have a question, please raise your hand. There's somebody with a microphone that will come around.
Thank you. So we have seen that we can data sync offline.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
We have seen we can sync the data when we work offline, after we work offline.
Yes.
So the thing is, we have before see the sign on, the user authentication,
yes,
and I need the key from the user to save the data.
Yes.
So how can I can log in offline?
Yes. A good question. So the question was basically, and we talked about this earlier, is we saw a scenario where we took the data offline, but we also saw a scenario where the key of the logged-in user is used to basically make the data available. So how does that work in an offline scenario?
Ah, definitely. Well, at some point, at the beginning of the when you want to work with data offline, you want to download some existing data to your app. And at that point, you are required to authenticate. So you authenticate, and you get the data. At that point, we have your ID. It is possible, however, in some scenarios where you're starting to work with the data, let's say you're doing the site asset management, right, and you go and check the assets, and you are offline all the time from the start, and only later, once you get out of the building, you get the signal. In that case, you can authenticate, and we can do, whenever we generate records, locally we create unique IDs. Most of the time that we use GUID, so it's sufficiently unique. If the records that you entered, some of them or use reference data that already exist on the server, you can add ID mapping. You can use the ID mapping pattern inside the automapper to map your local created IDs with remote IDs. So there are. Basically, these patterns have been, offline scenario has been in the industry for some time, so these patterns do exist. The new, what we introduced new with offline, with mobile services, is recognizing that most mobile offline scenarios these days tend to be task-based, so the data is a projection on the client, it's simpler on the client. It's still very complex on the server, it is simpler on the client. Recognizing that we can do we can use existing automapper technologies to simplify the work with mapping between IDs, between fields, et cetera, and mapping the data. And recognizing that we can offer this simple offline experience across platforms. It is not useful anymore to build offline solutions that only work with one operating system. And so we build the cross-platform offline capability that works with our table APIs, with mobile services APIs on the cloud.
Great. Any other questions? There's one question here.
Thank you. The back end of the hybrid connection, does that have to be a SQL server, or could it be a service that provides data?
I'm sorry, the echo's kind of bad.
The back end of the hybrid solution, the hybrid connection,
yes.
You showed it going to a SQL server.
Yeah.
Does it have to be SQL server, or could it be a service of some other description?
Yeah, so we showed a hybrid connection. The question was, can the hybrid connection connect to other things? We showed SQL server here. The hybrid connection is just a TCP connection between two machines. So you just define what port you want to connect to. SQL server uses port 1433, so we basically use SQL server there. But you can create a hybrid connection to any TCP endpoint from any service that's on your premise. And it can be TCP or HTTP. Yeah. Great. Okay, another question here.
Actually just builds on the previous question.
Okay.
And that is, what about if you wanted to connect through, as I've been on a talk earlier today, on the Azure service bus?
Sorry, so if you were connecting on Azure service bus?
Yeah, so via a hybrid, but service bus connecting to your on-premise, but then your app connecting through the service bus.
Yeah, so you can certainly use service bus to connect on-premises as well. There, it's depending on how you're using service bus, it's either a connection where you've written some .NET code to make the connection possible using service bus relay, or it's a connection that's using messaging, where the connection, the .NET APIs for SQL, then basically you won't be able to use those with that kind of connection, because that connection isn't a TCP connection, it's a messaging connection. So you can use service bus to connect to on-premises as well. This just makes it very, very turnkey to make any network port available to your mobile service. So we're out of time with that. Kirill and I will be available, and Yavor as well, after the talk. So we're happy to field any more questions offline.